Hannah Stanley with you. That did not sound like it was supposed to. Make that go away, please. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. This is WGN Radio. Gosh, here's the thing that's crazy about tonight. Dan Segrew, producer Dan, you guys know him. You love him. He's Nick's guy.
Hi.
Hi. Before you were Nick's guy, you were Bill's guy.
Right.
And before that, you were Steve and Johnny's guy.
Right.
I think that's it.
Yes, correct.
But I was on Bill's show semi-frequently.
Right.
You were our producer, ours. You were his producer when I was on his show all the time.
Right.
So I've known you, I think, longer than any of the other producers exclusively from here.
That
like some
sense,
of the other
yeah.
producers I've known at other stations. But you have never, you and I have never worked together
this
as producer
is the first
and host.
Time. Yeah, very exciting.
This is so great for me.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. My throat, my voice is close to normal. Although I had to spit out a cough drop just now because we came out of the news and I was like, oh, it's not gone yet. I'll spit that out for a moment. Upper respiratory infection. I was on the air filling in for Patty on the 7th of December. That technically today is what, the 19th? Did we just,
correct.
We flipped over to the,
yeah,
19th?
We are on the 19th?
So that's 12 days ago. By the time I was done with the show, I could essentially not talk. I had done a charity event earlier. I knew I had a cold that was building. Did the charity event, filled in for Patty. And then I sing with the radio, with the music, when I, of course, am, you know, in between Nick DiGilio.
Sure.
Occasionally I pop on a song.
Yeah.
Sing on the way home. Could not sing.
Oh, wow.
At all. And then that began like 5 days where I didn't have my voice at all. There was a lot of clapping. I didn't have the clapper. That would have, like, lights around my house would have been going on and off.
You didn't wear a sign around your neck. Like the string behind your ear.
So the day after when this all happened, the Friday the 8th, we're trying to get, the kids are getting ready for school. And I'm doing this. I can't talk. So I have to whisper. Please don't make me talk. You know, and like, you know what to do. Like, make your lunches. There was a lot of pointing happening. Then my son, who's almost 10, goes, Mom, today, you need to go to the teacher supply store and buy a whiteboard so you can, and I was like, or paper. Like, why do I need a whiteboard? That's that's not what I need. I have paper. I did end up having, I went through a drive-through and I made him order for me. I needed tea. And like, we were in the middle of running errands. Cause of course I'm still doing mom stuff.
Right.
And we pull up to the drive-through and the woman is like, Starbucks, can I take your order? And I'm like, doing this, like the one finger, as if people can see me aside from you, Dan, but I'm doing the one finger, like, hold on a minute, because they can see you,
right,
at Starbucks.
Right, right.
And so I'm telling Grayson, but I can't tell him. And he's like, I can't, they won't hear me because he's kitty corner behind me in the seat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, no, unbuckle and lean out the window. It was ridiculous. And the woman was like, I totally get it. I know, like, just pull around.
Like, well, that was nice.
So I got my tea with my honey. Yeah, it was a very, very strange thing. I ended up going to the doctor after 5 days, I think, of having this. Upper respiratory infection and laryngitis.
Oof.
So it wasn't like I was faking it.
Right.
That's a real thing. But I guess it's a virus that's going around. And then I ended up taking a Z-Pak a few days later because it was turning into a sinus infection.
Mm.
Good times. So, and one of my close friends has the exact same thing. It was her charity event that I was doing.
Oh, wow.
So I can only assume that it's my fault.
Wow.
And I feel really bad.
Like, we'll go with what it's going around.
It is going around. It's going around something fierce. A couple of things coming up on the show. My voice cracking is one of them. You're welcome. By the way, 312-981-7200. We will have your calls and texts featured throughout the entire program. We are going to be talking about Facebook, and not necessarily in a good way. Because did you see the interview by the former Facebook executive talking about how we're all just programmed? Like, the way that they have set up Facebook, it's ruining society. I think that's what he said. That's basically what he said. So we are talking to a psychologist, Dr. Karen Phillip, actually a psychotherapist, and she's going to be on with us at the bottom of the hour. So at 2:35, she will join us. We're going to be talking about so many important Christmas topics. So many. One, why do your Christmas lights keep getting tangled? How can you prevent them from getting tangled? Two, cheap gifts to give people for the holidays. Things that you can actually afford that are actually decent. And another one, how do you fake loving a gift that you don't? That's all going to be during the 3 a.m. hour. 4 a.m. hour, solid. Super, super solid. You guys, as Nick listeners, know how much Nick loves Saturday Night Live, how much respect he has for that institution. Chris Farley passed away 20 years ago today. Technically yesterday. It was the 18th. 20 years since he left us. So we're going to do a review of some of his greater works, some of our favorite pieces of his work, and welcome what your memories of him. You can text those in at any time. We'll keep track of those. Like I said, 312-981-7200. Has anybody ever gone to a salt cave? I went to a salt cave the other day. There's one, there's a few in the area. I went to one several years ago. I actually didn't go into the quote unquote salt cave itself. I was at the spa, I guess you would say, for a different treatment. And I had a sinus infection. And while I was sitting there waiting for my treatment to begin, my sinuses cleared up. And the woman behind the desk said, oh, it's because of the salt cave. The air, you know, it's obviously the salt doesn't just stay in that room. So I've always been kind of fascinated by this. I went, there's one locally out by me, which is in Batavia. I went there the other day because I was still not feeling 100%. Awesome. Dan, have you ever been to a salt cave?
I have never been to a salt cave. I was given the salt, Himalayan salt lamp of my wife for a recent, for our anniversary, but I have never been to like a salt cave.
I love those lamps.
You know, it's funny. I haven't used it a ton, but we were at a Christmas party this past Saturday, and the house we were in, they had one in every single room.
Yeah. So what I understand is that the salt gives off negative ions. If someone understands this more effectively than I do, please feel free to call in or text 312-981-7200. But it's supposed to do this laundry list of things to your body to have the air have these negative ions in it. So you go into this room that has pink walls. There's bricks. The bricks of the wall are made up of pink salt and they're backlit. So it's very cool. And then you walk on crushed salt. So it's kind of the size of like rock salt. And you walk in, you know, little white socks and you're fully clothed. So it's not like awkward or uncomfortable. You're not necessarily by yourself. There's only one other person in the session that I was in. It's an hour long session. And then you sit in zero gravity chairs, you cover with a blanket, and you just totally zone out for an hour. They have ocean waves playing. We have to go to break, but we have to keep talking about this because I was, it's worth talking about. More about the Salt Cave experience, and then we're going to have Dr. Karen Phillips join us after the news at the bottom of the hour. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN. Hannah Stanley with you tonight, filling in for Nick DiGilio. I'll be here tomorrow night as well, and then a couple other shifts coming up over the next week or so, heading up to the end of the year. So I was talking about how some of you who have heard me before will realize that this is not my full solid Hannah voice, a little bit sultry. Lauren Bacall is what Patty just called it. That's complimentary. But I went to a salt cave. We have a texter from 224 that says, I have asthma and I've always wanted to go to a salt cave. What was the cost? And how long does the positive effects last? Here's what I've learned. The cost, the cost can vary. So I went just kind of as a one-off, first time I tried it. It was, 1 hour session was $30. There was no one in the session prior to us. So the door was open. So we walked in at like 10 till. So I was actually in it for longer than an hour. But you go in, you sit in a zero gravity chair. It was very open. I think there's probably like, let's say 14, 15 chairs, 16. There's benches actually on the one side of the wall. And again, I've been to two locations, but I've only been in one salt cave room, but there's a place out in like, I think Lyle area that also has one, but I went to the Salt Escape in Batavia, right on the river. Very pretty. So, and by the way, all the hippies in Kane County apparently live in Batavia. They all have stores there. There's like metaphysical this, Gandhi and me that, Salt Escape. So if you want to get well holistically, go to Batavia. That is what I've learned. And so, and now I'm getting better. So I'm giving all the credit to that. but what it is purported to do is that these negative ions that are given off by the salt, much like you can get at a smaller scale from a pink Himalayan salt lamp, is it gives off negative ions. It negatively charges the air. I think I'm saying this correctly. 312-981-7200 if you have questions or comments, or you can tell me exactly what this is supposed to do. But I laid down in the zero gravity chair. And within 5 minutes, again, this is the second time this has happened to me, sinuses cleared, opened up. I could breathe like it was my job, which I guess technically it is. But I was like, wow, this is just so relaxing. They have wave sounds playing. They give you headphones to kind of block. The woman was so cute. She was like, you'll still hear the wave sounds playing if you put on these noise cancelers, but it helps with snoring. And I went, really? And she goes, oh yeah, people snore all the time. They fall asleep. It's so soothing. And there is a relaxation that kind of washed over me. And I didn't know if it was the salt or the quality of the air or the darkness and it's not dark, dark. You can see these beautifully backlit pink walls. But there is just something so relaxing about it. I totally fell asleep.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned dark. The only thing that I've done on a similar wavelength is I did go to a sensory deprivation tank. Have you ever been part of those?
No, but I have been interested in this.
Yeah. So if people who aren't familiar, basically you're put into a coffin for all intents purposes.
Which is weird to me.
Yeah. And it has got salt water in it. And so you're just, you know, buoyant enough to float. And then they close the door. And so it's so dark and there's no light let in that it just, you can't tell where, you know, the device you're in starts and where it ends and things like that. It just feels like you're complete darkness. And, one of the things that they say in there is that if you fall asleep for an hour in it, it's the equivalent of 8 hours of normal sleep. Because your body does not have the external stimuli, you know,
So there's no sleep stress.
Right. You know, like people now with their Fitbits and things like that, you can tell like, okay, I was in pure REM sleep for this amount of time and I was in light sleep for this amount of time. And, you know, even if you're in a very dark room, there's still some light. There's still the light from your alarm clock, things like that. And I did fall asleep for 20 minutes of it and I had the most lucid dream I've ever had in my entire life.
Okay. I don't know that I would be good with this, though.
It's not for everybody. That is for sure.
It sounds, this to me, I feel like my brain would freak out. Even though, can you, like, are you completely encapsulated?
Yeah, I mean, you are completely encapsulated. I mean, you could, in theory, reach out and touch the top of the device and, you know, you could have the tech.
Which I also wouldn't like.
Right. But yeah, because, you know, the other, obviously you're on your back, but you're floating. So you're not.
So are you floating on water or is
floating
there
on water? It's like salt water.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd be good because I would be nervous that I would fall asleep and then roll over and drown.
Well, it's not that much water. Like, you know, it's just enough to be buoyant. So if you turned over, your shoulder would hit the bottom of the thing at some point because you start to sink.
But I guess I would try it just because I would be interested in it. But the way you've described it is borderline terrifying
right,
to
right.
me.
I mean, for people who have claustrophobia, it is definitely a no-go.
Because I've had multiple MRIs and things done in the past couple of years. And there's a part where they're like, you're going into the tube. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa, why? Hey, you're like looking at my liver. Why is my face going in here?
Right.
I'm looking at the inside of the tube. And there's like a 10 to 20 second moment where I'm looking how I can crawl out.
Sure.
And then I'm okay. Because now I know where I can crawl out.
Right, right. Like, I have an escape route.
The table has stopped moving. But there is, I get why people can't be in those things.
Sure.
I'm okay with it, but it's my liver. You know, I'm not, like, if it were doing my brain, I would have a big issue. But the salt cave, not encapsulated. Right. You're in a room, the door is open. They knock on the door 5 minutes before it's over to allow people to wake up gradually. So this is something they very much expect. But I actually sat up towards the very end of the session, and you have white socks on so that you're not tracking in dyes or whatever from your socks. And I kind of put my socked feet in. I wanted to see how deep the salt was. So just like you do with the sand at the beach where you dig your toes in.
Sure.
That's what I did with the salt. And it's probably 2 to 3 inches deep.
Wow.
So it's a really stable, and it doesn't hurt your feet at all. Also, which was something that I thought it might. But it is really relaxing. Just kind of like letting your feet dig in the crunched up salt. It was... The sound was cool. The sound of walking on it. It was neat. I would do it weekly. So getting back to the original question, what was the cost? For me to just do the one session was $30, but at this particular location, you can buy a package of five for $100. So that takes it down to $20 for an hour. And then you can also do a monthly package that's unlimited. And I think that was like $99 for the month.
Wow.
So especially if somebody who has asthma, if you found that was positive therapy, I guess, for you, or that you had good response, especially this time of year where it's dry and people are getting sick and everything. It's supposed to be incredibly good to ward off bacteria and all kinds of different stuff. All I know is that my sinuses have a little party every time I go.
And it was interesting. I know you talked about this a bit last week, but you know the impact of color on your mood, you know. And it's interesting that it's an all pink room.
Yep.
Because when I heard you last week, you had mentioned like you definitely don't want to paint your kids' room certain colors.
Yeah, no.
They're naturally tend to be more aggressive because of it.
And, yes,
you know, that's part of the reason why everything is
doctors'
beige.
Offices are typically green.
Yeah,
because that's the most soothing color. It's why green rooms are supposed to be green, is because it's calming to guests before they go on the air or on television. Yeah, there's a lot to color theory. It was one of my favorite interviews ever. Lee Eisman, who's the head of Pantone, and that's what we were talking about, because they announced the color of the year, which is ultraviolet. Also a sort of a metaphysical color, and one that leads to a lot of healing. And they had a lot of purple in that room. They have light that kind of plays around. There's a mural at the end. I found it really, really soothing and relaxing. And then their purported effects, your skin is smoother. I noticed that right away. It's very soft, your skin. And you're supposed to breathe better for like the next 12 hours, kind of that you can actually document. So this might be great for someone who has asthma. And then also sleeping. I slept like a... People always say you sleep like a baby. That's the stupidest thing ever.
Right.
Babies don't
obviously
sleep.
Obviously don't have kids, yeah.
No, I sleep like an old person all the time. That's how my parents sleep. It's very broken sleep, but they sleep a lot. No, I don't. I thought it was great, so I want to go again. So I endorse it. Thank you, Salt Escape in Batavia, for being there when I needed you. It was, I joked about it on ironically on Facebook, because the first place I went, because I have friends who are on television, radio, comedians, singers. And so I'm like, you guys, I don't have a voice. How do I fix this? And I got really, really good advice for what we thought was wrong, which was a simple cold. They didn't, you know, for Harry. And actually, I couldn't do anything about it anyway, because laryngitis is laryngitis. We're going to take a quick break, come back, get you guys to news, and then we're going to come back with a psychotherapist talking about Facebook and depression. More Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiDillo after this.
We know for a fact that what all of these systems do, every single one, is it exploits our own natural tendencies in human beings to get and want feedback. And that feedback, chemically speaking, is the release of dopamine in your brain. And so what these feedback loops do, and they exist everywhere, in Call of Duty, in other video games, in social networking sites, they get you to react. And I think that if you get too desensitized and you need it over and over and over again, then you become actually detached from the world in which you live.
You become callous, you become crude.
And you live in front of your screen.
Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. I'll be with you guys until 5 a.m. And then Dave Plyer is starting us off. That was Chamath, I'm going to say this correctly, but give me a second. Palihapitiya. Mm-hmm. I did that correctly and we verified it and then I forgot. Hannah Stanley, which is an easier name to say. And I actually know how to say this lady's name, Dr. Karen Phillip. My maiden name was Phillip. So, welcome, Dr. Karen Phillip, psychotherapist, clinical hypnotherapist, and a parenting and relationship expert. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Hannah.
And good morning to you in, Sydney, Australia. Thank you for making time out of your day for us.
No problem at all. Always a pleasure.
Well, the clip we just listened to, which you are aware of, is a former Facebook executive who made quite a stir this week with several interviews that went relatively viral. And I actually was one of the people who posted it as soon as the article was published. I was ironically on Facebook. I was like, this is why I don't spend as much time on Facebook as I used to. And the way I interpreted his words was that, and what he actually did say was that had he realized what they were accomplishing, he would have potentially done it differently. They have made us, Facebook and social media in general, made us addicted, essentially. He didn't say addicted, but we're so needy for that hit of validation, endorphins, et cetera, that we're now focusing our life on social media instead of just being social.
And that's fairly accurate, actually, Hannah, but I don't think Facebook is making us do that. It still is our choice. Each and every one of us has the choice. I know a considerable number of young people here in Australia that have chosen to actually not really engage in Facebook at all. They've actually made that choice. They've said they've seen their friends, even their parents to a degree, mm-hmm. and they've chosen to actually remain off Facebook, to ring their friends, to text them instead of doing it through social media. So it's not that Facebook is enforcing us to do anything or making us addicted to it. It remains our choice. I mean, myself, I'm on Facebook very little. I use it usually to keep in contact with the kids, see what they're doing, if they're traveling. But other than that, no, I find it's become so commercial these days. It's more sales orientated rather than even friendship orientated. And I think a lot of people, from what I've been told, particularly here in Australia, are actually changing their minds and staying more off social media, particularly Facebook, because of the changes in the last 12 months. So, I think it really does remain our choice, the human choice. But what he said about, about the downtime off social media and endorphins, that is a little bit of an issue. And because it is still really so new, we don't know the long-term effects. And this is really more the issue than anything.
Now, it is ultimately our choice. You're absolutely correct in that. But what they are, for those who are on Facebook and on social media, when we do see those likes and that validation, and then you do get that dopamine hit, doesn't that play into it becoming really an addiction or allowing it to become that?
Well, it's sort of the same as saying that someone's a gym junkie. They go to the gym, mm-hmm. they love the endorphin release they get from moving physically, But are we really addicted to the gym, or is it something that we really enjoy and we wish to continually repeat it because we get that same joy from what it is we're doing? And it's pretty much exactly the same. I mean, yes, we all enjoy validation. We love it when people agree with us, and we like to share our opinions, which we can do far more these days than we ever used to. But he did discuss about social media and confusing the truth with popularity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, advertising has been doing that forever. You know, they people that have advertised, particularly large firms that have advertised and spent millions of dollars in their advertising over the last, say, 50 to 100 years, have been trying to convince people that their product is best, their product is most popular. Everybody loves it. Everybody wants to use it. Coca-Cola is a prime example of that many years ago when that started their advertising campaign. We're just doing it differently now through social media than what we were through television, through radio, and through newspaper before. It simply changed.
Now, one of the facts that I found most interesting in preparing to talk to you is that many people become depressed from their time spent on Facebook. They're not actually posting. They're scrolling. They're looking at other people's posts and seeing the positive things and the glowing life that other people are posting, and it becomes depressing, which when you multiply that by the holiday season and, you know, winter here in our area, it's kind of a triple threat.
It is exactly right, Hannah. We have found, studies have found that Facebook does seem, or social media, I shouldn't say Facebook, but mainly Facebook, I guess.
My fault too, yes.
Yes, it is a bit responsible for people feeling depressed, feeling low, feeling left out. And while a lot of people do use social media to connect with others, even those that they've never met and often on the other side of the world, we are a social being, and that's what humans are. But when we don't have that one-on-one social communication and we're just in a group of people without really faces and voices and tonality, then we can continue to feel quite isolated. And most people, as you know, they put up the happy times. They don't put up their arguments. They don't put up the fights that they're having, the disappointments that they experience. They simply put up all the good times, the fun times, the parties, the celebrations. And if you're in a position that perhaps your life is not going as happy or joyful as you would like, or you've got a distressed family situation or even a separated family, then you see all of these pictures and these posts and all these comments, and you can indeed feel rather isolated, left out, and more alone. And we are discovering that is in fact happening. I mean, there's a number of sites for separated parents, for instance, and they get on and they actually, rather than posting all the good things, some of the sites are posting very negative things about their situation and how they feel, and that can actually drive more and more people down. So because it's only really been out for less than 10 years, all of this social media, it is really in its infancy, and we as human beings, we're not really used to things, to our technology moving as fast as it has. And the technology has moved faster in the last 10 years than it has in the history of mankind. So we are going to experience issues and problems. We are going to be playing catch-up, I think, for quite some time.
It's interesting, too, because I see people write things on social media, like, I'm so sick of everybody posting only their happy times. I almost do it sort of as a diary. You know, there are things that my kids did or said that was funny, or, you know, if I'm going to be on radio here, I use it to promote it. So I can see where people would say you only post happy things, but, you know, my private stuff is my private stuff. I don't necessarily need to post that my husband and I had had a row.
Yeah, a lot of our issues, a lot of our downtime, a lot of our problems, we do still hold them very close to our heart. They are very private, and we often don't really want to. We don't want to discuss that with the world. But what we do enjoy is sharing the fun and sharing the laughter, sharing the celebrations. We love doing that. So, yes, I guess social media is more filled with some controversial stories, but a lot of celebrations and fun and graduations, and so it should be. But I think most of us really do need to recognise that is only half a picture. It is certainly not the full picture of a person's life. It is only a snapshot of that moment in time. We don't know what happened 10 minutes or even half an hour after that picture. Mm-hmm. We don't know what happened 2 hours before. So we see these pictures and we sometimes can feel then left out or perhaps a little isolated because I'm not able to share in with what everyone else is doing. I don't have the groups of friends that everyone seems to have on Facebook. But you know what? That's only a small group of people, really, that are sharing their joys. And the other thing that Chamath said, that social media confuses truth with popularity, is also a very true point. Because a lot of stuff, as we know, on Facebook and social media is not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's there for sensationalism. It is there to create conflict or even discussion. So, you know, there's a lot of information going on social media that isn't necessarily accurate. And this is where it becomes very difficult for us to really understand what is true and which is what is reality.
Dr. Karen Phillip, my guest, joining me from Sydney, Australia, a psychotherapist, clinical hypnotherapist, and parenting and relationship expert. You can get more information via her website, which is Dr. Karen, K-A-R-E-N, Phillip. I almost spelled it like my maiden name. I came this close. It's PHILLIP.com, DrKarenPhillip.com. We're going to continue more with what Chamath Palihapitiya said it with what he was talking about. Thank you. And then also really getting our kids off and how we're going to deal with some holiday stress. I've got so many questions for you. So we're going to take a quick break, Karen, and then come back right after this informational message on WGN. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. This hour is flying by and I'm happy to say I'll be here until 5 a.m. when I get to turn you over to Dave Plyer. My guest joining us this evening is Dr. Karen Phillip. You can get more information at her website, which is drkarenphillip.com. That's two L's and a P-H. My maiden name was F and one L. So that's where I got confused. Karen, thank you so much for your time again.
Oh, my pleasure, Hannah.
Now, one of the things that the Facebook executive, so many people here in the States saw this, Chamath Palihapitiya, said, and you mentioned it also, was that you confuse truth and popularity is probably the number one priority of every preteen and teenager that I can think of, and I'm guessing globally as well. So this, it seems to me, social media could be most geared toward that teenager demographic, but also potentially the most dangerous or critical.
And that's exactly right. Their brains, teenagers and those in their early to mid-20s, the brains are still developing. Maturity of the brain doesn't reach males until around 29 to 30 years old, females around 25 or 26. So by gearing it to the 14-year-old to about 25-year-old, we're getting them in their formative years of brain development. And this is what we don't know the ramifications of, and we probably won't know for another 15 to 20 years. But they certainly are geared to that, and as you say, popularity gives young people validation. It means that I'm accepted. It means that what I'm saying has got worth. Therefore, I am worthy. Therefore, I feel confident about myself. So when we don't get the likes and the comments and the remarks, then our validation declines and our self-worth and self-confidence also goes down. So, yeah, there's a whole range of things going on that we're only discovering really in the last, say, 5 years happening with social media.
There's a website I was actually telling the producer off the air called Lego Life that's put together by the Lego people. I feel very comfortable in the safety structure that they have built so that there's no identity, there's no chat rooms. It was a safe place for my 9-year-old to post pictures of his Lego builds. And yet what I realized very quickly was as soon as he would post a picture, 5, 10, 30 minutes later, he was going back in to check if he had gotten anybody who liked it.
Yes,
five people liked this, mom. 10 people liked this.
Years ago, we'd have mum and dad to say, oh, my goodness, that is amazing. Yes. Let me take a photo. I'm going to send it to Nana. You know, I'm going to put it on the fridge. And that would be the validation that we needed.
Yes.
Whereas now we've extended our validation out into the hemisphere, if you like, and we're waiting on these complete strangers to give us that validation. So this is the problem that we're discovering. And we're really, as I said before, in our infancy to know how to handle it and what to do about it. But certainly we need to develop some boundaries within our use of social media, and the adults as well as the children are needing to develop these boundaries. And I get a lot of families and couples, and then they bring their teenagers in to say, okay, they're addicted to their phone and they won't get off their phone. And I mean people even in their 40s and even up in their 50s have got this same issue. Their work is being infringed because they're on their phone and not working. I had an optometrist not too long ago, and him and his wife worked together, and he was an optometrist and also an eye surgeon, and their business was declining because he would duck out to the bathroom in between patients and be there for 15, 20 minutes playing games.
Oh my goodness.
On social media. So she brought him in for some hypnotherapy to alleviate his use. And what we did some hypnotherapy, but I also discussed with him boundaries between like 7 and 8 or 7 and 9 a.m., no social media, no games. He was permitted 1 hour between 1 and 2 o'clock and then again between 8 and 9 o'clock. So we really had to enforce for him, more so than even his teenage children who were also doing it. So it really isn't that age specific, believe it or not. We think it is, but it really isn't.
Yeah, I had to have a conversation with my son and say, what you are looking to get validation from isn't really real. This is, you know, I hope that you do understand that people do like your things, but you don't have to put it out there. And he even realized that it was making him, a little bit antsy. You know, if he only got one or two likes, then he was trying to figure that out. So he pulled himself off of it, which was great. But what I found very telling is that the former Facebook executive, and just to be clear, Facebook was very adamant in making sure people understood he hadn't worked there in 6 years. And many changes had been made. But what he said is that the way he controls his children's social media usage is that they get no screen time. Zero. So there is.
I don't know if that's possible these days. I really don't.
I know.
I think that's a little bit too harsh, I believe.
Aggressive.
We want to fit in with our friends. Our friends are talking about it. And if we can't become, you know, sort of involved in the conversation, then we feel somewhat ostracized. And that's the last thing we want to do for our children. So, of course, we're going to need to allow screen time for our kids, but we need to allow it with boundaries. And because it's happened so quickly, most parents have not really felt the need for boundaries, if you like, because they didn't really expect them to be walking around with their phones on their hip pocket looking at the screen 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so to speak. But I normally get kids and you know, when I speak with the families, to sort of, okay, between sort of 7 and 8 a.m. or 7 and 9 a.m., no screen time, and then maybe between 8:30 and 9, depending on their school hours, they're allowed to check it before they go to school. I'm not sure about America, but here in Australia, the kids all take their phones to school. They're not allowed to use them in class, but they all have them at recess, they all have them at lunchtime, and they all have them on the way home, which I think is somewhat regrettable. But I can understand it, particularly for the teenagers, if they want to check in with mum and dad that they're going here or going to a friend's place. But we need also then at home to, like at 6 o'clock, if that's dinner time, well, the phone goes off for an hour, we sit at the table and we talk. We do not have our eyes on the screen. We actually interact and integrate as a family. And this is what a lot of families come to me with issues, that they're not able to achieve that because their kids don't wish to put their phones away. They want to keep up to date with everything that's going on. So I think once, as you did with your young man, Hannah, that if we start to demonstrate our limitations and our boundaries, then our children often will follow. We may need to enforce it at first. But then most of the time, the families that I've worked with, once the children have had it enforced to a degree, the kids are actually happier. They're saying, you know what, I really like those couple of hours that I'm not on social media, and I really like the fact that I now charge my phone at 9 o'clock out in the kitchen rather than in my room, because therefore I'm not hearing that ding and I'm not getting on to check everything that comes up, and I'm therefore sleeping better. So various boundaries are really important, and the parents need to set those boundaries and rules, and so the children will follow their lead. So if you see mum or dad sitting on a computer, sitting on their phone or their tablet, you can't really expect the child not to do exactly the same thing.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because when I was discussing earlier about the Lego website, they designed it so that the kids could have an experience to emulate what their parents are doing. There was a need for it, and it's no longer, you know, my mom was a teacher and I used to pretend to be a teacher. Now mom is on Facebook and they want to pretend to be on Facebook. It's lots of things have changed.
It is, and our children, they're little sponges. They model what we do. And before social media, they would model us, you know, out in the shed building things, or under the car fixing things, or in the kitchen making things. That's what they wanted to do, or as you say, be a teacher or a nurse or a doctor. But now they're seeing their parents engaged with their devices, so therefore they're copying that because it's there in front of them. So I think if it was parents that started the lead, if you like, just like you have with your little man, you know what, guys, we say to them, I'm putting it away for a couple of hours a day, or for after 7 o'clock, bang, it's gone. I'm going to sit with you. We're going to watch TV. We're going to play a game. We're going to talk. We're going to interact, or even go for a walk outside, you know, in the evening moonlight or whatever. But we need to do something else with them. And sitting in front of television, and I don't know if you're probably too young, but I know years ago when television went colour back in the 70s, there was a big thing that, oh no, our children, they were going to be destroyed because they're stuck in front of this idiot box, as it was called then. And all they're doing is they're gawking at a screen. They're not talking. They're not communicating. We're destroying our kids. So then it came along that television went off when we ate dinner, and television wasn't being played, you know, when we're having our meal of an evening. It's a very similar thing that's going on with social media. So even though it is new, it's not as new as we thought, but it's easy to turn off one television in the home because we've got devices in every hand of every child and every adult, and that's the difference. It was easy to turn off one television. It's much harder now to enforce all of the people in the household do exactly the same thing at exactly the same time.
Turn off one Wi-Fi. That's all you need to do, is turn off the Wi-Fi and everybody will be off. Dr. Karen Phillip from Sydney, Australia. You can get more information at drkarenphillip.com, and that is P-H-I-L-L-I-P. Karen, thank you so much for your time this evening.
My absolute pleasure, Hannah. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio tonight. Thanks, you guys, for having me. I'll be here tomorrow night with producer Dan. I cannot believe that after 5.5-ish years, this is our first show together as host and producer.
You know, I'm fortunate to have this job. I really love working the overnights, but, you know, obviously it doesn't lend itself to, you know, many fill-ins, you know, kind of coming in and coming out.
Right. Well, Nick is here a lot.
Nick is here a lot. Nick loves his job as well. So
yes.
He does not take his vacation time until he absolutely has to.
I know, until he's physically forced from the building. But it's been, and days that I've gotten to fill in for Nick a lot during the holidays, you're off
right,
as well.
Right.
So this is, but I knew you when you were engaged.
Yep.
About to get married.
Yep.
Now you have two babies.
Two babies.
Oh, it's crazy. It's awesome.
It is good.
It's very exciting. Hey, did you know it's Christmas time?
I've heard rumors.
We might have mentioned this once or twice. And by the way, thank you again to Dr. Karen Phillip. If you missed her website, it is drkarenphillip.com. I want to be here more often so that you can book her more often, because I love her.
She is a pretty lady.
So please ask Nick to take more time off and ask for me. Okay. He doesn't have to do that. He can do whatever he wants. But she's great. I just want to be friends with her. So Christmas is coming. So many things to be stressed about, but apparently one of them is tangled Christmas lights. Do you do a real tree?
We do not do a real tree.
Do you do, you do a tree?
We do a tree. Yes.
Question mark. Okay. Is it pre-lit?
It is pre-lit, yes.
Pre-lit trees are the greatest invention ever.
Fantastic.
Next to heated steering wheels. That's my new favorite
thing. My wife and I just bought a minivan earlier this year. And
it has the heated steering wheel?
It does.
Honestly, I would never use it if I lived in the South.
We had the option between going just like the standard minivan and the luxury one. And we're like, we're going to be putting 90,000 miles in this thing. So we might as well pay the $800 extra.
Well, and that's the thing, because monthly, it turns out to be like $6 a month.
Right.
You look at the sticker price and you're like, we could never pay that.
Right.
And then the guy's like, because it's always a guy.
Sure.
The guy's like, well, it's only $8 a month. Yeah, $8 for the heated steering wheel, worth it.
I swore, I'll never use this. And then, like, it was like a cold August day. And
yes.
I turned it on and I'm like, oh, this is really nice.
It is everything I dreamt that it could be. I highly recommend it. Because we bought a used car that happened to have it on it. It didn't, like, I didn't need it. I'll never not have it.
Right. Now it's going to like,
I could live in Southern California and I'd be like, no, we totally need that. Just in case. So I remember very, very vividly, you know the scene from A Christmas Story where Ralphie swears?
Sure.
Because it's based on his dad's tapestry of swears.
Right.
So I remember my dad's tapestry of swears, and they all had to do with the multicolored lights, the strands of lights. And I think they were thousands. I don't know that they come in a thousand strand, but I think they did. But we lived in a ranch house, and they would go from one end of the living room down the hallway to the bedrooms and back, let's say 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
Trying to find the one frigging light that didn't work.
Right.
So that was after he got them all untangled. And I'm very anal retentive. I get it from my father. You know, things were put on like the reels where you wrap the lights around. This is a thing. We come from a media family. We know how to wrap light cords. Okay. This is a couple of years ago, British grocery store Tesco. It's a chain. They hired temporary Christmas light untanglers for the holiday season. They're actually very prone to tangling in the first place, and it is, quote unquote, not an easy problem to solve. This is awesome. I don't understand it either, because you put them in there. They're nice and tidy when you put them in.
Right.
You pull them out. Nobody's going through the boxes in the meantime. Who does this? Who messes up my lights? According to Colin Adams, a mathematician, why would a mathematician be involved with this? At Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts. I wish his name was William. That'd be better. He's the author of the Knot book, KNOT, which is an introduction to the mathematical theory of knots. That's why he's a mathematician. First, the cord on which the lights are attached to is prone to tangling, just as headphone and earbud cords are. Or telephones, for those of you who remember that. Physicists, we're pulling in physicists now, so let's review. We've got a grocery chain in Britain. We have a mathematician, and now we have two physicists involved from the University of California, San Diego. They did a study to see how easily the cords can get tangled. They put bits of string of various lengths in a cube-shaped box and then mechanically rotated the box so the strings tumbled around like socks in a dryer. Repeating the experiment more than 3,400 times, the first knots appeared within seconds. More than 120 different types of knots spontaneously formed during the experiment. But no one is shaking the box where my Christmas lights are 3,400 times. I am putting it in a bin that I can see through, and I am carrying it down my basement steps, and there it sits. Yes, we play hockey in the basement, but it's in the opposite corner. There is no, never the twain shall meet, or twine, as in their physicist's experiment. The longer the string, the more likely it was to become knotted. Well, obviously, here's the thing, though. Strings are fibrous. So I get that there could be static electricity that could form that would get them together. Or like the Velcro type action, right? The fibers would rub up against each other. I'm doing like a rub thing with my hand, which I don't know that you can hear on the microphone, but Dan can see me doing that. As the length of the string increased, the probability of a knot forming approached 100%. But again, I'm not doing anything with that box, and I'm definitely not doing it 3,400 times. The material that the cord is made of is a flexible cord. So that makes it more likely to tangle than a less flexible one. And while the length of the cord matters, and actually I have a thing about that, its diameter matters too. In general, long cords get tangled more easily than short ones, which makes sense because you've got more structure to tangle. But a cord with a large diameter will be less flexible, with which reduces the risk of knotting. Because those little like interior lights, those things can knot like crazy. But the other thing is the cord is twisted. And so the lights are flippy floppy every which way.
Yeah, I think actually that's what our caller David is mentioning, is that it's a mess to begin with.
It is. David, hey, you're on WGN.
Yes, my name is David. I was in the Navy. We had the same problems with cable. What happens is you have like a left rolling curl to the wires.
Okay.
So if a light bulb would go out, another one would still receive electricity, so it would try to keep the lights lit. So what happens is when you start rolling it up, you are in fact putting more twists in the wire.
Okay. I got it. Yeah.
So what happens is if you have a left rolling wire with a right rolling, because most people are right-handed,
uh-huh,
put it on a spool, when you unroll it, you're unrolling it, and it just makes a big knot.
All right.
You get the right poles with the left twists of the wire.
All right. So what you're doing is you're going against where it's naturally been, because it's twisted that way, to the left.
Correct.
But then it's being rolled, and so we're torquing it. And because and so then it's going to naturally try to go back to the way it was, which is to the left. I'm going to be all Beyonce. And then we're going to do it to the right. And then it's going to get all like the telephone cords where they used to get twisted up inside of each other itself.
Correct.
And then you put the spoky outy parts, which are the lights, and then they're just going to get hooked on each other, similarly to the Velcro analogy that I made before. And now we just need to throw them away and start over.
Well, I like to cut them and try to use electrical tape and put them back together again.
All right. See, David, that's because you're a Navy man and you are resourceful. I sit there and go, you know, I could buy 100 lights for $4. That's all I'm saying. All right, David, thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. All right. So David completely explained what is accurate, because there is a curve, because they're the lights, when they're shipped to anywhere, big box stores, etc., they're wrapped on a spool. So it gives them a shape that they're then used to, because they could be wrapped on it for a year, let's say. And then when we take it off, because there's metal inside of the wire, because the wire, and then it's got the plastic coating. Yeah, so we're going against all of that. And then even if by some miracle of miracles we wrap it the same way on the spool, then it sits there for 11 more months. And that's why it's prone. Here's the thing, though. And I told you this before, Dan, my friend, that I watched on HGTV,
mm-hmm,
the White House Christmas decorations. Mm-hmm. I watch it every year. It's a great show. They have volunteers come and they spend a week decorating the White House. It's beautiful.
That is awesome.
It's really, really neat. And then, of course, it's open to the public. But they, you know, for the tour, they have all of the places on the tour decorated. And grand, grand Christmas trees. And there's an official Christmas tree. And then there's a military tribute Christmas tree. And it's really, really remarkable. But one of the things that was most eye-opening to me while I was watching this is a White House engineer said, what we have found over years and years of doing this is using shorter strands of lights makes everything easier. They don't tangle as easily, which we learned earlier, that the longer the twine, the easier it knotted. But it's just easier to handle. So they do 45s only.
Wow.
which is what, maybe 4 feet?
Yeah, just short. Just
okay.
Shy.
Yeah. So roundabouts, let's say 4 foot of a strand, and then they wrap the tree. They don't, because I always like separate the wires and stick the branch through it.
Right.
And this is back in the day when I was actually, I have two pre-lit trees. I love Christmas. I would have like six trees. But I have strung lights on wreaths and garland for outside my house, and always one of them is dead.
Sure.
You know, so if I've got, let's say, six strands of lights, I'm at least restringing one strand of garland. And I'm always doing hundreds. No more, because I have learned my lesson. But instead of like pushing the branch through the light, because it's the three cables that are twisted together, they just like wrap it around the branch. And so they start on the outside, go to the in part of the tree, and then come back on another branch. And they can maybe do, let's say, four branches, and then they got to do another strand.
Wow.
That's a lot of connections, though.
That is a lot.
But if one of the chief engineers...
Right. But you figure if they figured
if they
out
know it,
their time is worth that,
yes,
to do the 45s, then it's kind of like...
And another...
they're not just putting up 12. They're putting up 1,200.
Yes. I think there's hundreds of trees, at least this year, because one of the main hallways, there's like 50 trees or something. It's gorgeous. One of the things they do, though, is they wrap these trees each year, and then they pull, they reuse those strands of lights every year. Cost savings.
Well,
passing that on to you, I'm sure.
Right.
However, the city of Chicago, you know, they do Michigan Avenue. It's beautiful. I'm looking at it right now from the 7th floor, the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Tribune Tower. They cut them down.
Really?
I've seen this with my own eyes. They come through, and my thought was, just unplug them. Because I know it's cold. You don't need to send workers out there and pull them off. Pull them off in the spring. Nope. They go out there with clippers and yank them off. And they just throw away strands and strands and strands.
Wow.
So I'm just saying, if the White House can reuse 45s, maybe the city of Chicago could reuse whatever they're putting up in the trees outside. Because they do it every year.
I mean, they're covered by snow. Yeah, I mean, I'd wait till March. I mean, they're covered
just
by snow
unplug
by
them.
February.
I don't go outside. I take down the garland because that's obvious around my door. But if we have lights, when we used to do lights up on our porch, those would stay up. We just unplugged them. But, you know, you don't go out, put the ladder up when it's icy. That's just crazy town. Every once in a while, I was able to just get the right arc. You could just pop them, and they would just, like, the clips would just come flying off.
That's a pretty cool feeling.
It was pretty neat. It was pretty good. Really enjoyed it. Tangle-free Christmas, 45s. That's what the White House says. He's the 46th president, though, isn't he?
No, I believe he's 45.
Is he 45?
Yeah.
Maybe they just said that because he's the 45th president.
It's all synchronicitous.
Oh, see? I thought it was a good tip, and all I know is some GOP conspiracy to have us buy 45s. All right. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. Coming up next, 6 inexpensive gifts that don't suck. That's what we all need with a few shopping days left. More on WGN. Try a MyPillow. See why customers have described them as life-changing. Call 800-299-9579 or log on to MyPillow.com. Use promo code WGN. I have a MyPillow. Dan, do you have one?
I do.
We all, my mom gave them to us for a gift 1 year. We all four have them.
Nice.
For a while, we fought over them before all four of us had them. Like the kids kept taking them, and then we would have to go into their rooms at night and take the MyPillows back. And then finally we're like, let's just get them their own.
That's a tough act too, because you got to wait until they're that actual asleep.
Yeah. And then my son got savvy and was like, Mom, my neck is really sore. I slept on your MyPillow. That gets a little confusing. I slept on your MyPillow. I wish I had my own MyPillow. So now they all have their own. But then we had to label them because nobody wants to sleep on anybody else's MyPillow. No, it's my MyPillow. 6 inexpensive holiday gifts, as you just heard me discuss, MyPillow makes a great holiday gift. Inexpensive holiday gifts that everyone loves getting. Here's the thing. Not everybody has a huge budget for the holidays, and it feels like my budget gets smaller and smaller every year. This is a cool thing. 6 things you can give and not look like a cheapskate, because people are going to actually, it's not like you're going, like, here, I bought you some scratchers. That's, you know, nobody wants, well, some people want scratch off tickets, but homemade or gourmet food. This one I think can go either way. Dan, what do you think?
We do this. My wife makes a can cake, you know, like the soup can cakes. So that she does give.
No, I totally don't know what you're talking about. You should bring one in tomorrow so I can figure that out.
I'll see if we have any left. So, we do that for extended family. And this year for her, she's a teacher. And so she's got, you know, 10, 15 other teachers that she would be buying for. So this year she's doing a s'more in a can, I believe is how it is. Or
clever.
Yeah.
So then she just compiles these herself and she, right. Nice. One year we all got dogs in my family. Like all of us had 3 new dogs or however many. And I made dog biscuits for everybody.
Oh, that's a good idea.
In cute little like jars. That was a cost-saving alternative. Homemade or gourmet food. The good news is that you can do this pretty affordably, as you were mentioning. You can compile these gifts together. And honestly, head over to like the craft store, the Hobby Lobbies, the Joann, the Michaels. You can get these cute little mason-y jars or like flip jars pretty affordably. And trust me, if it's at Hobby Lobby and not on sale, it will be next week. Although you're running out of time for the next week. But use the coupons. They're on the app. You can get hot sauces. Really focus on what the person you're buying for enjoys. So if they're a hot sauce person, you can get some of those subscription clubs or just a variety that you can get shipped to you. Something from a local store. Or you can bake, even if it's not necessarily for your person, maybe for their dog or for their cat. Tons and tons and tons of ideas and ways to decorate them online. Pinterest, people, if you don't know Pinterest, get to know it. It is a crafty person's or a non-crafty person's best friend. Festive socks. This is a thing. Everybody loves the socks now. Do we blame Rob? What's his name? Name I won't say on the air.
Yeah, maybe. That would be the first time. Yeah.
All right. I don't say their name on the air. They get enough press without me. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, lucky. But he has like a sock company, I think. And I'm a little embarrassed that I know that. But this is a thing now. Everybody always, you know, you wore a suit and you had your black or your blue socks with your suit. And they like blended into your shoe. And it was just sort of this essential wardrobe component that didn't get much thought. And now you wear crazy socks all the time. And it's a statement piece.
Now it's weird for me when I'm watching like a Talking Head show and the guys don't have.
Yeah, it is. They are the pocket scarves of 2017 or the suspenders. Remember when Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan used to wear, they were braces technically because suspenders are stretchy and braces are made out of fabric that doesn't stretch.
Interesting.
There you go. Yeah. So when they were wearing their braces, that became a big status thing as you wore fancy braces. But now holiday socks, you can do this at the dollar store, find festive socks. Target has great stuff, like 4 pair for a couple of dollars, and then you can break it up and give it to other people. Multiple people. Festive socks. They don't have to be very expensive. They do have to be comfortable, though. I don't like that. Coffee and tea. I'm a big coffee and tea fan. I do that a lot for the teachers. Books. You know, we'll come back to the rest of these. Quick break, and then we'll get you guys to news. Hannah Stanley for Nick DiGilio. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio tonight. I was just telling Dan how fast this show moves. I'm giving him all the credit for that. It's also you guys, you the listener. By the way, 312-981-7200. We are continuing talking about 6 affordable holiday gifts that people actually like receiving. So if you have suggestions other than what we are discussing, you can text or call those in to 312-981-7200. We just skipped over coffee and tea. I love it. somebody hands me a gift card for coffee, thank you. Yes, please. That's amazing. But you can also find some really great coffee products. CoffeeCon is coming up, by the way. CoffeeCon. Actually, no, it just happened. I was sick. Shoot. I hate when I miss it. CoffeeCon Chicago will be coming up in 2018. But really, really, I got the neatest thing over the past year. I started using it, actually. It's sort of, it would put you in mind of a coffee press, but it's a glass pitcher with a receptacle for coffee in it, and you put it in the refrigerator overnight and poof, cold coffee. It's cold brew.
Wow.
It's awesome. I love it. It was one of those things where I'm like, when did I get this? And I started using it. And now I just always have cold brew coffee. And then you make the iced coffee and you can do the pretty thing where you pour the creamer in and it makes the beautiful swirls and you want to take pictures and be artsy. That is a really, really cool gift and definitely not one that everybody has and super semi affordable. So that's pretty cool. Tea accessories. A lot of people into tea lately. Maybe more so with the royal wedding approaching. See what I did there? We have a royal expert on who's going to be on tomorrow night talking about the wedding. It's very exciting. She's an American. So tea is another thing that you can do a ton of different things. Lots of, like, if people prefer tea bags, that you can get, like, grabbers. Where you can, I don't know what they're called.
Clasps.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sure. Where you reach in and pick it up and then you can kind of drain it. But there's so many clever products related to coffee and tea lately. Not just coffee and tea. Neat stuff. Books. Books can be very inexpensive. I think often overlooked for the youths. My son's getting several books. I'm very excited about that. My daughter, not so much. I'll have to fix that. I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, she's not getting any books yet. We'll be fixing that. But books for many, many people, they range, of course, in cost from incredibly affordable to incredibly expensive if you go for anything rare. But even think cookbooks, stuff, you know, if they like a particular cuisine, that is a great one, sometimes around $10, and people think you actually thought about them. That's really nice. Scarves and hats. Again, this is another one that can go either way. I don't know. Here, okay, so the scarf I'm wearing today is technically an infinity scarf. My friend made it for me.
Wow.
It's one of my favorite things on earth. It was like $4 a fabric. Infinity scarves are easy, people. We should do a tutorial, Dan, on how to make infinity scarves. Basically, you take knit jersey, which is like a knit fabric, and you take the width of it and you fold it in half and you stitch the one side. You can even hand stitch it if you don't have a machine. Done. Infinity scarf. There you go.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that simple.
It's that simple. And I love it. And I will tell you also, because there's so much fabric to it. When I was ill, I had a different one that she also made me on, and I had it kind of wrapped around me like a blanket. Because it was like down, it was like a little cocoon. We'll have to photo document that. So anyway, scarves are great. Infinity scarves are easy, very, very affordable. You can make them with knit jersey fabric. If you can sew, like 10 minutes with the machine. Done. Done. Hats? I don't know. Do you want a fedora?
I did own a fedora when I was a lad. Yeah, like 9. I demanded a fedora for some reason.
I love that
story. So
we
went to that place at Irving and Milwaukee, Six Corners over there, and went and got my fedora. It was very
over upsetting. By there.
Yep, over by there.
You got a fedora. Was it like a felt?
Yes.
Do you still have it?
No. It lost its shape after not me wearing it. It getting put into a corner and then being crushed by other things.
Oh, well, okay. I would love if hats came back into vogue. I'm predicting some of that will happen during the royal wedding.
No, see. Right, because the ladies wear those.
The fascinators.
Hats, yeah.
The fascinators. Yeah, I don't know that it's going to catch on in the States. I love that it's one of the things that they do across the pond. But around here, cute little hats for winter, not a bad gift. Again, Target is an option. Walmart, any of those places. Walgreens. Walgreens has great stuff sometimes. You can find a scarf and mitten and hat combos there. Bath products. Hey, this is another one, and I'll talk to Eileen about this later. That would be your wife.
Yeah.
We made bath bombs. Homemade bath bombs.
Oh, really?
So easy. And it took a longer amount of time in that they had to dry. Because you make it, it's not really a wet, there's some moisture involved. But you have to get them fully dried out so that they don't crumble. Mm. But we made them for Valentine's Day with like a little heart-shaped silicone mold thing. Awesome. So cool. The hardest thing was that you have to find citric acid. Amazon, $4, done, prime. That's all I'm saying. So you can do that.
What exactly is a bath bomb?
Oh, good. See, that's a good question.
Because right. I've read about it.
Yeah, because you're going to know this because you have two little girls. So what they are is they can range anywhere from like up to softball size. We made them tiny, so they were probably like silver dollar sized, but maybe an inch thick.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right. Probably, yeah. So I'm trying to think. Golf ball size. We'll say golf ball size. So anywhere from golf ball up to like softball size. Those softball size can cost quite a bit of money. And they would actually be more challenging to make at home because they would need a lot of drying time. But they fizz when you put them in the bath.
Okay.
So the citric acid and then there's, I think, baking soda in them. And you can put in essential oils. And it's awesome. So you get in the bath and it's fizzy and the fizzy makes your skin feel soft and it's nice.
Interesting.
Yeah. And those are easy. And again, like I said, I had everything but the citric acid in the house. So it cost me $4 to make these.
And it's a slow dissolve. So it.
Yeah. Yeah. They fizz as you put them in. So we gave them to my daughter's, other kids, those were like her Valentine's, and they said, "Valentine, you're the bomb." And so we gave one to each of the kids. So, I mean, it wasn't like a huge thing but then for her teacher, we gave her a whole jar full of them so that she could enjoy a more luxurious fizzy bath if she wanted to. But, oh, look at this. I didn't even look. Items like bath bombs, maybe under $10. You can buy soaps in bulk and hand them out in gift bags to multiple people this year. And really, if you're that creative, again, the Pinterest, you can figure out how to make all this stuff online. You can make your own soap. I don't suggest lotions. You don't want to make lotions. We've done scrubs, too. Do you know what a body scrub is?
I do not.
Okay. So there's salt scrubs and there's sugar scrubs. And you can, again, buy these at like Bath and Body Works or any of your finer bath, where your finer bath products are sold. You could also make them because they are exactly what you would think. They basically have either a sugar base or a salt base. And then you add in other flavorings, smells, aromas. So essential oils. I made a pumpkin. I made pumpkin spice latte sugar scrub once. So I ground up. I used coffee grounds before they were used, obviously. Freshly ground coffee and then pumpkin puree and sugar. Ta-da! And there was my sugar scrub. And then oil. You put in some oil and then put it in a cute container, throw a ribbon on it, and, you know, out the door it goes. And that's, ta-da! Your homemade sugar scrub. And then you use it in the shower and it's exfoliating. And you smell like a pumpkin spice latte.
Wow.
Or whatever flavors you choose for your pumpkin spiciness or whatever. Again, lavender. Lavender is a nice choice. It's relaxing. That's what I would say. Hey, Miss Stanley filling in for the next hour and 12 minutes. I'm always so bummed when I get done with this show. I love this time in talking to you guys. 312-981-7200. I feel like this one we're going to have a lot of people chiming in on, Esmeralda included. Six tips from experts on how to fake loving a gift you hate. Esmeralda, you've gotten a gift you didn't like, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure.
And what do you do?
Oh, thank you. And then it goes in a...
Is there a gift?
And then I shove it in a box somewhere, and then at some point I go, I need to clean out, and then I give it to Goodwill.
Oh, so you don't even, like, try to return it?
No.
Really?
Because usually it's not anything that's returnable, and goodness knows where it came from.
What are we talking?
Nobody gives me receipts or anything.
Yeah, no, I'm a big returner. And here, having worked in retail, you don't necessarily always need a receipt the first couple of days after.
I'm not one of those people.
If you know where it came from. What do you mean you're not one of those people?
I'm not into returning something. I don't have everything I need for it, a.k.a. a receipt.
Oh. What are we talking
about? Because, again, I've worked in retail.
Oh, yeah.
And I know the pains.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I worked in retail where I was like, no receipt, it was a gift. Sure, not a problem. Go pick something else out. That's fine. I didn't care. We've all gotten gifts we don't like. All of us. 312-981-7200 if you've got tips for how you can get a receipt for Esmeralda, because it seems like that's what she's lacking, is a gift receipt for so many things. But what you want to do to make the person, because of course you want to be gracious in your receipt, find one true thing you can say. It could be the ugliest pair of fancy socks you've ever seen that are obviously toddler-sized, but you still have to say one nice thing about them so that the person can feel good about that. They say to look for a hidden yes inside you. Oh, I love that color. That's what you're needing to do. Esmeralda, think of the worst gift you've ever gotten. Do you have it in your head?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you share with us what it was?
I was shirt.
Okay, a shirt. Mm-hmm. What was something positive you could have said about it?
It's cute.
Okay. Was it?
No, of course not.
No, see, you need to find something that really was true about it.
Why?
Because that's
how... You just
how,
go, oh, it's cute. They don't know any better. And then you go, thanks.
But you want to be sincere. So you need to go, oh, it's the perfect size.
That's fine. You don't have to. They don't know any better. Unless you tell them.
Well, that maybe you are telling them in your oh, it's cute. Maybe they're a listener. And they go, I don't think that was sincere. But if you go, this is my favorite color, you know me so well, don't they feel special?
Yeah.
Okay. You need to watch your hand gestures, especially the middle finger. Oh, it's so great. Faking joy runs deeper than just your words. You need to really make sure you don't. If you have to, don't sit there statically because it makes it look like you're working too hard. That's what they say. So you have to just, basically you need to act like you really like it. Do you make an effort or you just go, oh, it's so cute. Look over there, a squirrel.
Yeah. Put on my best. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
Okay. That's
I love it. Great. And then shove it back in the bag and then we don't speak of it again.
Thanks so much. Wherever did you find such a lovely item? And what
no
is
need
their
to
return
pry.
Policy? Do they have a liberal return policy? Your hands can actually be a telltale giveaway that you don't really like a gift. People experiencing unhappy emotions tend to ball their hands into fists, tuck them against their bodies. That just sounds like you're having a little temper tantrum. Not you, but the person receiving the gift. Or put them in their pockets. I'm usually seated when I'm getting a gift, so I don't know that they would go in the pockets. My hands haven't been in my pockets all night. I've been seated. If a person likes what they're getting, their arms and hands are going to go further out from their body and tend to be loose or relaxed. My daughter, whenever she gets an item of clothing that she loves, she hugs it. She goes, oh, and her arms are wide out. And then she hugs the item as if a person is wearing it. And then I go, okay, so you like it. But she makes it so obvious when she does love that if she goes, oh, yeah, okay, thank you. Then I'm like, dude, you need to tone down the overreaction to the good stuff. That's how we're going to make this. Fake it till we make it. That's what I got to work. Bring it down when it's real. You want to avoid giving a fake smile. Esmeralda, I know your fake smile. I've seen the fake smile. Just occasionally. Once or twice. Like right now. She's not responding. I know you can hear me. Those of you watching at WGNRadio.com can see Esmeralda. You need to smile with your eyes first. Esmeralda, what is that called?
Oh, that's smizing.
Smizing. I knew you would know that. Our girl Tyra taught the Americas how to smize. Dan, did you know what smizing was?
I did not.
Okay. Tyra Banks made smizing a pretty commonplace word for people like Esmeralda and I. You smile with your eyes first. Completely forget about your mouth. If you smile with your mouth first, you're going to mess up. Because if you go, oh, with the fake smile, and then your eyes are dead, that's not good. You need to be like, high eyebrows. This is all acting. This is all these experts are teaching us is how to act like you like something. Keep in mind there are degrees of appropriate eye contact if you want to look natural. If the eye contact is too little or too much, it'll feel like it's not sincere. I feel like you need to practice this. Make a kind of little zigzagging motion that people have when they look around a face. Don't stare. Dan is staring at me right now.
You zigzag your eyes over their face and that shows them that you like it?
I don't know. I think it's just natural instead of like holding. Okay, hold on. I'm going to stare at you for 5 seconds and see if you feel uncomfortable. And I'm staring. I'm staring. Yeah. But if normally, and this is something I do personally, I have a problem holding eye contact like during conversations and stuff. My eyes are always looking at other places. I don't know if that's a personality flaw. It's just something I've noticed that I'm like, I'll look over your shoulder and my brain is always thinking about different stuff. So I'm like, it's hard for me to like just look at you when I'm having a conversation. Skip the cliches as you unwrap your unwanted gift and have a moment of unpleasant surprise. You may be tempted to reach for the simplest phrase such as awesome, which this person calls a one word cliche that tries to convey a happiness you don't really feel. Awesome. Wow. It's like King George's speech from Hamilton. Hamilton tickets, those make a nice gift. I got those last year for Christmas.
That's what we're getting each other this Christmas.
Is that what you're going? Have you seen it?
We have not seen it. We have heard the soundtrack, but we have not seen it.
My children love the soundtrack. The songs that I've let them listen to.
It's pretty catchy.
Oh, yes.
The reason I heard it was because we drove to Buffalo once. That's a 9-hour car drive. And my wife and our friend that came with us, they fell asleep. And so I listened to it twice because they fell asleep.
It's a 3-hour play.
Right.
Musical. It's remarkable. That is a gift that is not affordable. That is a high ticket item, but really, really worth it and something cool to look forward to. So I'm excited for you. I want to go see it again,
but
I'm just trying to win the tickets in the lottery. So
that's the way to do it.
Or win the lottery so I can buy the tickets. Either way. People will notice if your voice is strained or if you have to clear your throat before choking at it. Thanks. That's awesome. People. How do you convincingly soften your tone of voice so that your words sound as authentic as they can? Back to acting. Brilliant. Thank you. Make your own personal happy experiences for honest. They want you to go method. They want you to go method. You have to think of your own happy thoughts so that you can genuinely muster up a sincere thank you.
It's pretty in-depth.
Can't you just be happy that somebody thought enough to give you a gift? That's what I think you need to do. Because otherwise, this is hard. Like, people need to learn how to improvise in the next 6 days. That's challenging. Hanukkah ends today. What have they been doing this whole time? We didn't get these tips out in time. I feel bad. I'm sorry if we failed you as someone who celebrates Hanukkah. If you've had to get a bad gift And then now you're in a family fight because you weren't sincere enough. All because we failed you doing this. I'm very sorry. Guess what, people? This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. And wait, I'm early. Can I do this early or do I have to wait?
Vic Vaughn is usually pretty professional.
Vic Vaughn's giving me the thumbs up. Vic Vaughn, by the way, is one of our favorite people. Dan and I took a poll, a pre-show poll. That's my clue. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio and tune in. It's 4 a.m. Here's Vic Vaughn.
I'll have to review that poll later, Hannah.
It's scientific.
Thank you.
Stanley filling in for the next 53 minutes for Nick DiGilio, and then I'll be with you guys again tomorrow night. Thanks to Nick for letting me sit in these two evenings and get to work with my friend Dan. This has been a treat, and I was going to say a rare treat, but kind of rare because I get to do it again tomorrow night.
Woohoo.
Woo. I don't know anyone of a certain age that hears that song and doesn't have a particular visual in their head. Now, I think everybody from like in their 20s and younger has no clue what I'm talking about and might not even know the song. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about Chris Farley and what he meant to comedy and what he meant to you. You can text or call in again, 312-981-7200. You know, we all know Nick is a huge SNL fan, as am I. Have you been over to the exhibit?
No, I haven't had a chance.
I haven't either. But there's an SNL exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications right up the street. So I need to head over there because I mean, this is the 45th year, I think. It is a large amount of work. Large. But Chris Farley always in the list of those most favorite and most influential cast members ever. 20 years ago, now yesterday, when we were prepping for the show, it was 20 years ago today, Chris Farley passed away just up the street. He was found in his apartment condo in the Hancock Center. And it is remarkable to me that it has been 20 years. It doesn't seem like it's been that long. And then again, it seems like it's been so much longer. But for those who know SNL like I do and like Nick does, we of course have the visual of him dancing shirtless during the Chippendales audition with Patrick Swayze, who is incredibly buff. I don't know. Built. Chippendale-esque, if you want to say that. But that was the song that they were dancing to. And I can't, and now they're both gone, but I can't hear that song without thinking at least for a split second about that skit. And Patrick Swayze got hired. I loved it when they're like, you both have such good moves, such good moves. And Patrick Swayze was like, dude, if I get it, it's only because you're fat, because you have moves that are incredible. That is a good skit. He was 33 when he left us. He would be 53 years old right now. What was your favorite of his characters or his sketches? Do you have one, Dan?
You know, Matt Foley obviously is the one that's kind of like
a man by the river.
Yeah, that is one that constantly just. Like you said, it's become part of pop culture, you know, and that's the side of a good skit from Saturday Night Live is that it expanded beyond, you know, people who don't watch SNL know what that's from.
And people who don't know Chris Farley know that sketch, the heavy guy who can't keep his pants up, who's yelling. That was sort of his trademark, was yelling his lines. That's my Matt Foley impression.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, that's about all I can muster with the voice I have left. And If you have a favorite skit, the Chris Farley Show, which I loved. Basically, here's me doing an interview as the Chris Farley Show. Hey, Dan, remember when I used to come on Bill's show? That was awesome.
That was awesome.
It was awesome. That was the Chris Farley Show, and it always made me laugh because it would be like talking to Paul McCartney. Remember that one time you said the love you take is equal to the love you make? And Paul McCartney says yes, and he goes, that was awesome. That was so cool. And then he thought he was an idiot for asking those kind of questions. Do we have any other clips that you've been pulling clips all show, and then I just...
No worries. Let's hear a little bit of the Chris Farley Show.
All right.
Hi. Welcome to the Chris Farley Show. I'm Chris Farley, and my guest tonight is one of the greatest musicians, or rock musicians. I guess songwriter ever. That sounds stupid. God, I'm an idiot. I never know how to start these things.
You're doing great, Chris.
Really? No, I'm not. Anyway, I guess I didn't have to say who you were because, man, I mean, everyone knows who you are. You're Paul McCartney.
Well, it's great to be here.
You remember when you were with the Beatles?
Yeah, sure.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay. Oh. You remember when you went to Japan and at the airport they arrested you because you had some pot and made all the papers and everything?
Well, to be honest, Chris, I'd kind of like to forget all that.
So stupid. What a dumb question.
No, Chris. I get asked that all the time in interviews. Maria Shriver asked the same question last week.
Really? Did you know that she's married to Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Genius in that is how nervous he is. Knowing he's not really nervous because he's a performer, and Paul McCartney was on quite a bit during that era. But he's just, that's exactly what everybody would do when he was playing every man or every woman. I mean, there have been lots of interviews where I've walked down the studio hallway going, oh, I wish I had answered that, or I wish I had asked that better. I wish. The jerk store called and they're running out of you. That's exactly what goes through all of our minds. So I loved that. We have Steve texting in. My absolute favorite was the one I described earlier, the one you described earlier, me, which is the Chippendale sketch. I love it. You have some of the hottest moves. It's only because you're obese. You didn't get this job. 262 is texting in. By the way, you can text in your favorite Chris Farley sketches or moments or memories if you bumped into him in the city, because he was a frequently seen on the scene here in the city. 262 texted in, Chris Farley as Newt Gingrich was spot on. I don't remember that. Do you?
I don't. I did a quick search, though. Apparently, at one point, he went to Congress as Newt Gingrich, and like everybody was in on it, but like he walked up to the podium and did his Newt Gingrich, and then the real Newt Gingrich like came in and tapped him on the shoulder. I know that
Dana Carvey went and met with President Bush, the first one, and they were in the office, and President Bush said, call for the Secret Service. And so he called the guy in as President Bush, and everybody got a big laugh out of
him. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. I didn't know. I love it. I love it when our government actually, you know, does work. That's always awesome. But there are moments where like everybody can have a little levity. Like when CJ Craig from the West Wing, Allison Janney is her real name, but she went and started a press briefing like a year or two ago. Oh, and it was like, funny. Now that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's very funny. Now get back to work. We have things to do. Not you. You're doing great. Do we have Matt Foley action?
We do have Matt Foley action. Do we want to do it after the break?
Let's do it after the break. Keep those texts and calls coming in. 312-981-7200. We'll continue talking about Chris Farley and all the joy he brought to our lives and movies and oh, so many great things. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN. Hannah Stanley here on WGN with you for the next about 40 minutes. Then I will turn you over to the opening bell. Dave Plyer is filling in today, from what I've heard, which is nice because I always like to say hi to Dave Plyer. We're talking about Chris Farley, who left us 20 years ago yesterday, although Dan and I still consider it today because we haven't slept. And if we go, I don't know, do you and Nick play by the same rules that Patty does? If you haven't slept, it's still the day before.
No, Nick will go technical. He will be like, today is Tuesday morning.
All right, then it is Nick's show, so it is Tuesday. So that is fine. It is Nick's show, then I play by Nick's rules. And so he died 20 years ago yesterday. And that is still unbelievable to me that we lost him that long ago. It does not feel like it should be. I mean, really, that's just, it's very upsetting. It's still upsetting. What was your favorite movie from Chris Farley?
You know, I think it's got to be Tommy Boy. I know that's the cliched answer, but it is just, there's so many memorable moments and quotes from that.
That's a great one and an obvious one, right? I love when they're singing The Carpenters. That's my favorite scene in probably top 50 favorite scenes of all movies ever. I love that. But I loved him in Wayne's World.
He was very good.
When he's the security guard.
Right.
That was just so him. 312-981-7200. What are your memories of Chris Farley? Your favorite sketches from SNL? Your favorite movie? Your favorite quotes? He really made such 33 years he was on this earth. From Madison, Wisconsin, which I actually didn't realize. He lived just up the street from us. Passed away in his home in the John Hancock Center right up the street. But I didn't realize how big of an impact he had on entertainment and comedy in general in such a short amount of time. Very Belushi-ish, you know, because that was a similar lifespan and a similar impact. But the movies are just classics. You wouldn't think that they would be classics. Tommy Boy is just silly, but it's become even a cult classic now.
Yeah, I mean, anytime I put on a coat or jacket that is too tight, I start humming that guy in a little coat. I mean,
people say that all the time and they don't know what they're even saying.
Right.
They don't know why they're saying it. Like my brother, I think he's seen Tommy Boy. God, if he hasn't seen Tommy Boy, I'm going to have a conversation with me as his older sisters. Beverly Hills Ninja.
That's been making the round on cable lately. So I have a community to watch a few minutes of it just to remind myself, but it's like, maybe not.
Black Sheep was pretty funny, though.
Yeah, the scene with the bat. Oh, yeah. It's loose in the house. Pretty great.
Tim texts into 312-981-7200. Chris Farley could often be found hanging out at the Twin Anchors restaurant in Old Town. Get the ribs. You've been there, right? Yummy.
Yes.
They also have a fish fry that's delicious. He was extremely friendly to everyone and did not let his celebrity affect the way he acted. I've heard that from several people who had either bumped into him or knew him. He was just a normal guy. Coneheads. I don't remember him in Coneheads. I don't really remember the Coneheads. I saw it, but... Yeah, so quite a few credits. Billy Madison. I love Billy Madison.
He's the bus driver.
He is. Small part. Not a small actor. Airheads, that was also a small role. was on the Larry Sanders Show. Oh, he played himself. That makes sense. I'm scrolling through his credits. Pardon me, Tommy Boy, of course. The biggest. Do we have a little Nick Foley action? I think we'd be remiss if we didn't have Nick Foley.
Hey, Mom. Dad.
Brian. Stacy. Your mother, Ellen, and I are so glad you decided to join us for this family communication session.
So, what's up? You guys getting divorced or something?
No, we just wanted the family to talk as a group.
Okay, well, let's get it started then.
All right, well, Stacy, Brian, your father, Ted, and I are a little bit concerned. Celia, the cleaning lady, was in the family room and she found a bag of pot.
She didn't smoke it, did she?
No, she didn't smoke it.
Now, we're not here to come down on you. I mean, that's not what we're about, okay?
We're just concerned that pot could lead to other things.
Crack, ice, boom, pow.
But we know you don't want to hear this from us.
Sure, I mean, we're your parents. Who wants to hear this stuff from their parents, huh?
But your father and I came up with a brilliant idea to give you kids some direction. A motivational speaker.
Yeah, one of those guys who speaks to big groups at high schools and churches.
You mean to come to the house?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
All right, later.
Thanks, anyway.
Hey, come on, you guys. This set me back a few bucks. Okay, his name is Matt Foley. Now, he's been down in the basement drinking coffee for about the last 4 hours, and he should be all ready to go. I'll call him up. Matt, we're ready for you. His speech is called Go For It. Now, he's used to big groups, so make him feel like there's a crowd here. Matt, come on up, buddy!
All right, how's everybody? Good, good, good. Now, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker. Now, let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old. I am divorced. And I live in a van down by the river. Now, you kids are probably saying to yourselves, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get the world by the tail and wrap it around and pull it down and put it in my pocket. Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat. You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river. Now, young man, what do you want to do with your life?
Actually, Matt, I kind of want to be a writer.
Well, la-di-frickin-da! We got ourselves a writer here. Hey, Dad, I can't see real good. Is that Bill Shakespeare over there?
Huh? Well, actually, Matt, Ellen and I have encouraged Brian in his writing.
Dad, I wish you could just shut your big yapper.
Now, I wonder, Brian, from what I've heard, you're using your paper not for writing, but for rolling doobies. You're going to be doing a lot of doobie rolling when you're living in a van down by the river.
Yeah, that is so funny. I forgot the Lottie frickin' da. I will tell you what else. I forgot anybody else was in that sketch. I didn't remember David Spade was in it. I didn't remember anything. I knew other people were in it. Did you remember anybody?
I remember because Nick would tell the story that everybody on that set broke. Like, everybody started laughing except for Phil Hartman.
Phil, right.
Because it's Phil Hartman.
Consummate professional, Phil Hartman. And then him jumping on the table at the end, falling. But there, it's just, it's so infamous, that sketch, that you just remember the van down by the river and then everybody just loses it. Such a shame. 20 years ago, yesterday, because we're playing by Nick's rules, because it's Nick's shows. We want to get you guys to the news. It is 4:30. Here's Vic Vaughn. Hannah Stanley, it's the Nick DiGilio Show. 25 minutes left until I turn you guys over to Dave Plyer, who's filling in today. On the opening bell, I was just flying a drone around the office. I forgot that other people are starting to come in. So I freaked out Bennett a little bit. Bennett, who's in for the morning show and doing the opening bell. My friend Bennett heard the screeching. Well, maybe I'll fly it again. I tried to fly a note into Dan, but I forgot Dan's door was closed. And then I crashed it into the wall. Drone, awesome gift, by the way. Sharper Image. They sent me a drone to play with, which is something to do when you're not on your cell phone. That's the transition I was looking for.
Bravo.
people have long said, and you know what, as we were talking with our guest, Dr. Karen Phillip, in the first hour, so much of this technology is so new, we don't know the data. But as long as there have been telephones and then cellular phones, there have been moms telling their kids not to keep them by their phones because it's going to give them brain cancer. Because you don't know what's happening with that cellular data and the towers and the buzzing, and it's causing tumors. Cell phones' reputation as a health risk is far older than the technology itself, but worried consumers have, of course, blamed the device for everything from cancer to infertility, with little evidence to back up these claims, and experts have been split on the issue. For example, airplanes. We have to disable our phones, and we have to put everything away, and we can't text or do anything while we're on the airplane. And I'm okay with that because I don't mind having quiet time on the plane. I don't need to hear somebody else's conversation. When I take the train into the city, I hear plenty of that. That is fine. However, the California Department of Public Health, we'll refer to them as CDPH for the rest of this interview, when they released a warning earlier in December following a lawsuit from a researcher, Joel Moskowitz, who's at the UC Berkeley. He claimed that the state of California was putting citizens in danger by withholding information on the potential side effects of cell phone usage. Boy, California is the place to do this. They are always leading the way. BPA, which is in can linings, like aluminum cans, they're lined so that the product doesn't leach the products, whatever, from the aluminum. California banned that before anybody else. RSBT banned before anybody else. California, they're the first state to go smoke-free. California, always leading the way, trying to keep their people healthy. However, a newly released document focuses on avoiding the radio frequency energy specifically. So that's going to be the RF signals. Cell phone signals are one source of RF energy, and because it's a type of radiation, it's a common source of phone-related cancer fears. The CDPH recommends reducing exposure to the energy waves by sending text messages instead of making calls. Okay, I'm in. My phone rings, and I believe you must be calling me to tell me something is wrong with your thumbs, because why would you not be texting me? I don't understand. My mom will text me. I will show you texts from my mom, Dan. You don't even need to read them. You just need to see how long they are. There are multiple scrolls involved. And I will reply with, sounds good. And then she'll send me another. Like, I won't get a text from her for 10 minutes because it's taking her that long to send me a text. It's a whole email and a text. And then she calls me, even though I'm responding, and goes, yeah, so I wanted to tell you. And like, the stuff you just texted me that I replied to, well, you replied so fast, I didn't think you could have read it all. So now I'm just going to tell her she's making my radiation risk more. So you want to send text messages instead of making calls. Using a speakerphone or a headset when talking on the phone, and carrying your phone in a bag rather than your bra, pocket, or belt holster. Do you carry yours in your bra?
I don't, but okay. We have a family friend that does, and it always gives me the willies.
Yeah, I do. Here's when. Because I have had my phone drop out of my back pocket into the toilet.
Oof.
Right. Yeah. So that happened once, and now I know what to do. So instead of, especially in public restrooms, not necessarily here, you know, because I can set it down on the counter and know it's going to be there when I walk out. But like if we're on vacation, let's say, and I go into a bathroom in a gas station, then I slide it into the bra. Because I don't want it to go into the toilet. Because going in the toilet is bad enough, but gas station toilet, ew.
Yeah.
I would. That's just six shades of ew. 50 shades of ew. That's a new movie starring Dakota Johnson.
My college roommate had a legendary story when he got to graduate school. He was out enjoying libations one night, and his phone got caught in a pipe that was full of excrement. And so he went to the store.
Keep it.
Well, he went to the store to get a new one. And they're like, well, you know, that'll be $500 because you don't have your old phone. He's just like, well, if I bring my phone in, I can, you know, I could do this and I can get a new phone. They're like, yeah. And so his roommate was a football player. So they moved the manhole cover and he reached his hand down there and he pulled it out and got it and brought it to the store, and they said, oh, it's not operational, so we can't, you know, it'll be $500. So he like washed it off, he put in rice, he did, you know, everything you're supposed to do, and it got it back, came back to life.
Ew.
And so he brought it into the store and goes, I would like a new phone now. And they're like, well, we can't give you a new phone because it's operational, you know, it's like, now it works. So at that point, he's just like, I'm just going to pay.
Yeah. One, I can't believe it came back.
Yeah, it was insane. Like, he's like, I put it in rice for 3 days.
When I dropped mine into the toilet, it went in as I was going into the bathroom. So it was essentially fresh water. And by the way, I wish people could have seen my face while you were telling that story. It was the ew face. I caught my reflection in the studio mirror as you were telling me the story, and I was like, nope, that's exactly what I thought my face would look like.
Yeah.
The ew face. Rice is the thing. My son, we were out on spring break, and he had not seen the Pacific Ocean ever before, and he holds up his iPad to take a picture. Like, not doing anything wrong, doing exactly what you would want, capturing the moment so he can remember it for forever. Rogue wave knocks him down, fries his iPad.
Ugh.
Because you can't come back from salt water. There's just, it just doesn't work. We tried. We took it to that place you break, I fixed. You know that place?
Yeah.
Great. I love that place. Didn't even charge us. They did all of these different steps and they're like, nope, no, it's gone. Call it. Time of death. So they recommend you not carry your phone in your pocket, which that's where I keep mine. I'm guessing that's where you keep yours, back pocket.
Yep.
That's how it counts my steps. I don't know what else to do. I don't want to have like a fanny pack. That's crazy town. The department, which of course we are talking about the California Department of Public Health, who tends to be on the forefront of all of this stuff, they suggest breaking the habit of sleeping with your phone in your bed or turning it off or activating airplane mode before falling asleep. I don't have it in my bed. I have it on my bedside table, though, because it's my alarm clock. So that's how I wake up. I actually wake up to Songs from Hamilton.
Oh,
yeah, there you go. I'm not going to miss my shot. Cell phones release more RF energy at some points than others, like when you're traveling in a vehicle, streaming or downloading content, or using a phone in an area where the signal is weak. So you're more at risk for these RF signals when you're dealing with that. So if you're in the middle of, I don't know, let's say Nebraska, where there's not a big cell phone signal on I-80, that's when you're going to have the most RF signals. It's not as great as the radiation from X-rays or ultraviolet rays from the sun, and the jury's still out over whether it poses a threat to your DNA at all. We're not going to know for a long time, though. By the way, I have something that's radioactive right here. My banana.
Really?
Bananas are radioactive. Not as radioactive as your phone. Yeah. I didn't know that, but I learned it, and I was like, what? They give off radioactivity.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Regular Marie Curie over there.
I had a regular guest on my show when I had a regular show, Sam the Scientist, and he is a nuclear physicist, and he taught me things like that. Past research linking RF energy to brain cancer has come with some major caveats. One study found that rats exposed to RF energy were more likely to develop brain tumors, but those rats were hit with 7 times the radiation a person would get from a cell phone. And also, they were rats, so not a perfect replacement for humans. Even the CDPH acknowledges the limits of the evidence in the study. It cites, these studies do not establish a link definitely. However, it's good to err on the side of caution. Did you see the study? This is a little bit ago, and I will look at this while we are at break. But linking Wi-Fi to plant growth?
No.
Oh, it's cool. We're going to talk about that next. Is your cell phone causing you to have bad things happen to your health? Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGiulio. Actually, this morning. This morning. It's this morning already. It's unbelievable. I've got 9 minutes left. I'm excited to get to talk to Dave Plyer in a few minutes. I just saw him out in the hallway. Mary Vanderbilt is already here. We were talking about a study from California that basically says the RF energy in your phone, just be careful. It could be worse. And I honestly, when I heard it come up today and the wires, I was like, oh, well, California is going to ban cell phones because they ban everything. There are no plastic bags. You can't smoke anywhere. Everything except for pot is banned out in California. No, this is actually pretty benign for what it is. So it reminded me of a study that I heard on the news. I thought it was more recent than it is, but I guess what it happened is a group of Danish students did in high school, 5 of them did an experiment just for the science fair where they grew plants like pea plants, because that's always what you do because those are the easiest to grow. They grew plants near a Wi-Fi router. And then they grew a control group of plants, same lighting, same fertilizer, same soil, everything with no Wi-Fi signal near them. I don't know if they put it in a little box. I have no idea. The one that was close to the Wi-Fi faltered in its growth, really stagnant. The other one completely flourished as you would expect a pea plant. And so the quick conclusion is that Wi-Fi stunts your growth, much like my parents told me coffee would. But upon looking for this story, and here's why I thought it was more recent, is because a website republished the findings in April of 2017. So that's why I thought it was newer. But then, of course, I go to Snopes, which everybody should before they forward anything on. Go to Snopes.com or another fact-finding website. And what Snopes is saying is that they're not totally sure this happened. They don't know. Here's my question, though. Why don't we just try it? Let's try this tomorrow. Although here we've got a lot of radio signals going everywhere. But we'll start this experiment tomorrow. And then the next time I get to fill in, we'll report our findings. But what I think is the greater point is that there's so much misinformation or so many things that are believable or unbelievable about sleeping near your phone and having your phone. It's such a big convenience. It is night. I love it. I get weather alerts on my phone in the middle of the night. Yes, Tom Skilling, I still have my weather radio on. I do. It's absolutely true. But sometimes if I'm not at home, you know, if I'm driving home from here, let's say, my phone beeps and tells me that there's, you know, flooding in the area. That's a huge convenience.
That is a very nice convenience.
Or we're traveling on the road. I don't travel with my weather radio. I'm going to get reprimanded next time I see Tom Skilling. But I don't, because I have my phone and it tells me those things.
And it'll be interesting to see as obviously technology progresses, because I was watching a movie and it was set in the future, and they had where the cell phone was just built into your hand. Like that's how you
awesome
answered your phone. You know,
yeah.
There was no actual physical device. You just held your hand up to your phone. And then, like, it started getting me to think, you know, at one point my daughters will look at me and be like, wait, you talked to somebody on the phone, but you didn't see them? You just heard their voice?
You know, and you were tethered to a cord?
Right. You know, I mean, and when you dialed, you had to wait until it went all the way back. What's a rotary?
Rotary.
You know, and it'll be fascinating to see, obviously, in the context of this sort of thing, is like, well, what is healthy, what's not, you know, and there was that company in Wisconsin that microchipped their employees. Did you see that story?
Yes.
You know, and I would, for one...
Microchip your kid.
I would microchip it. I would do that. I'm a person who cannot find my keys, or like my ID comes out of my wallet and, you know, I'm searching for it. And if I could be guaranteed that I would be safely doing that, you know, I would probably want to do it. But then another part of me is like, not a chance.
But I chip my dog.
That makes sense.
I've told my husband 100 times. I'm like, I understand that there's, you know, ethical reasons to not chip your kid. But if it could help me make sure they were safe,
sure,
we'd do it in a split second.
Right.
Because that's what I want. That's all I want. But as we were hearing from our first guest, Dr. Karen Phillip, you can get her information at drkarenphillip.com. She joined us from Australia. When color television came to be, people thought, oh, this is horrible. Our children are becoming stupid. And I guess when black and white television, they only had a certain amount of programming every day. Now we have, you know, 5,000 channels and everything else. But it's always, the new generation is always scared about what this means.
Right.
But because these are new technologies, we really don't know what it's doing to us.
Right. You know, I mean, people have asked me, like, well, aren't you worried about it? And I'm in a lucky position where my daughters are young, you know, 2.5 and 6 months, that I'm like, I'm hoping by the time they're old enough to be on social media, like, we will have figured it out.
I would hope.
You know, like we will have either put in safeguards, or it would be so ubiquitous that it becomes like television, where it just, you kind of just can ignore it when you need to, and it's just part of life as opposed to like the main focus of the consternation or things like that.
You know, our guest, Dr. Karen Phillip, raised a point, because I'm stealing myself to be very much the really stern mom. Like, nope, I'm fully prepared to be the no mom. Like, I don't feel comfortable with you guys on social media. I know what I deal with, and they don't need that yet. They don't need, but she raised a point of having the ability to fit in and not standing out. And there is something to be said for that. You don't want to be awkward. You don't want to be that kid. So there's going to be a balance between what is okay. Grayson's about to turn 10, so I still have a couple of years. So I'm hopeful. But as far as, having their iPads in their rooms and having the Wi-Fi on, I don't know. The plant Wi-Fi not growing thing seems pretty feasible to me. I've had a great night with you guys. I am very excited to get to talk to Dave Flyer. Dave Flyer, good morning.
Good morning to you.
What's going on?
What is going on? Well, you know, wrapping up the work week at my, I don't want to say my real job, because this is a real job, but it's my other job.
Yeah. We've all got 87 side hustles.
Yeah,
yes.
Yes. Yes. Well, this one pays my mortgage. But so, yeah, that's going on. And then, you know, we're having 40 people for a sit-down dinner on Saturday.
Sure, because that's normal.
Well, we do this Polish Christmas thing, and we always rotate it amongst my cousins, but my mom's really not in great health, and she can't travel. So we decided to have it up in our neck of the woods. And, you know, it's funny. When I have, like, client parties and stuff with adults, my house isn't as messy. When I have just these 40 people because of all the kids, I almost have to bring the hose in the house and just hose down the whole place. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I love them all.
You book the team of housekeepers the next day?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
Pretty much. Yeah.
A guest that I'm hoping to have on tomorrow night runs this place. Just outside of Cleveland, and I've got to tell you about it, and I'm hoping to have him on, but it's called Castle Noel, and he has a t-shirt that says, I'm North Polish.
Oh, I like that.
Yes.
I like that.
So hopefully we will have him on.
You know what else is in Cleveland is the original Christmas Story house.
Yes. And that actually goes to my things that you can do like pre-Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Because Castle Noel is 40,000 square feet of Christmas movie memorabilia.
Oh, that's cool.
And holiday windows from New York. It's a really cool place.
Never heard of that.
You should. Cool. I hadn't either. And I got to go through it. I was there over Thanksgiving. It was great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Let's get this turned over to you, sir.
Sounds great. Have a great day.
Thanks so much.